I'd like to call to order the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Policy Committee. My name is Dave Klein, acting chairperson today. This is Wednesday, July 24th, and it is now 1:30 p.m. And we do have a quorum. Item 1B, audience participation. We do have a speaker today. Michael Ondecker would like to address AMX today.
Mayor Klein, Mr. Segedy, and members of the Policy Committee, thanks for the privilege of appearing before you this afternoon. It's been my privilege to serve for several years now as the chairperson of the Citizens Involvement Committee. And as you know, I don't appear at all Policy Committee meetings automatically, but when there is something that's a particular concern to the CIC, we do like to put a face to our deliberations and our findings and come down and tell you about them. In this particular case, my appearance before you today is in connection with Resolution 2013-12, which is part of your extensive agenda, so I'll be brief. Within Resolution 2013-12, there is a project sponsored by ODOT, which is entitled the I-76 Beltway Study. This project is shown as a new project, which is contemplating spending $16 million to optimize traffic flow. Well, in our particular area of interest, of course, optimum traffic flow is right up there with Motherhood and Apple Pie. But we felt that at the CIC, we were not given enough information, enough detail to render a considered decision, an informed decision. Therefore, we elected to table the item, the resolution. And we send it up to you with that finding in the hopes that in the ensuing week, since our meeting, there has been enough information generated so that you will be presented with the detail necessary to make a $16 million decision. Now, in a broad scope of things, $16 million may not seem like a lot of money. We deal with hundreds of millions of dollars. As witness yesterday's Beacon Journal, in which one project is almost $100 million here on our I-76-77 expressway leg. But again, we felt that we wanted to bring this up to you so that if you felt likewise, this information would be brought forth before the resolution is carried. So again, thank you very much for the opportunity to appear here today. And we appreciate all the work that you do, like ourselves. We feel that we're interested in a cause for the development of our area and the quality of life in our area. So thank you. Thank you again very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ondecker. This is item 6C on our agenda, so when it comes up to that, we'll discuss the comments at that point. Anyone else from the public would like to speak? Hearing none, item number 2, the minutes from the May 16, 2012 meeting.
Move to approve. Second.
Been a motion to approve and seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 3, staff reports. A, the financial progress report.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Financial progress report was attachment 3A in your folders. This report takes us through May 31st. Our fiscal year starts July 1st, so this was 11 months into fiscal year 2013. And if I can direct your attention to the last line of the table, line 9, we've expended 75% of the planning budget, so we're in very good shape financially. Even though we don't have the final numbers run, the year did close out June 30th. I know for a fact we're well in the black. Still, so we do recommend your approval of this financial progress report, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Chair, would entertain a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 3B, technical progress report. Curtis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things to update you on. First,
This summer, we've had one bike and brainstorm with the city of Green. That happened in June. It was incredibly successful. We had over 30 members of the public and two members of city council join us, as well as some members or some of the employees from the city of Green. It was a really great event. We're hoping to do another one in Barberton in September. So those continue to be a popular way to reach out to communities. Also, we have a new member at AMATS. City of Ripon is now joining AMATS. They have, the urbanized area of Akron has grown, and with that, they have become part of the Akron urbanized area, so we have invited them to join us. They have decided to join, and will be paying membership dues along with everyone else and be able to participate in these meetings. Also, we have our annual meeting that begins, or will be on October 11th. I believe everyone's received an email regarding invitations. We're looking for members to speak on a panel to discuss shared services. Again, the annual meeting itself is on October 11th. Looking forward to seeing all of you there. And then finally, there are no other questions. I did want to say that there are flyers out there regarding the PARTA Central Gateway Grand Opening celebration on August 5th, 2013.
If you may, I'd like to add the personal invitation to everyone from our board president, Vissler, and John Drew, and our board for the August 5th grand opening, and we'd like to see you all there. And I think
on behalf of Metro, we're having our board meeting on Tuesday, and we're going to invite our board members to join staff on a Metro bus to share the ride and head out there. And I'd also like to extend the invitation to any of the policy committee members who would also like to go. We'll most likely leave Metro's headquarters at, say, 12:15, swing by the transit center, you can park there, and then if Mayor Robard will allow, swing by the blue parking deck up in your place and hit 59. So the flyers are out there. I'm going to ask Jason to send out more information, which you can email us and let us know which pickup point you want to be at, and we'll let you know what time we'll be by there. So it's going to be a fun ride. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's all.
Thank you. Item C, AMATS Federal Funding Report. Victor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're looking at our funding program and balances table. Fiscal year 2013 ended at the end of June, and if you're looking at the table, you can see we have a few encumbrances already here in fiscal year 14. But switching to the next page, the second page of that table, and looking down in the fiscal year 2013 column, you'll see that we spent almost $28 million in fiscal year 13. This was by far the highest year we've ever had at AMATS, the history of AMATS, and also as part of that, we've only had like maybe four projects that slipped into fiscal year, four phases of projects that slipped into the next fiscal year, 2014. So it's actually been a really good year in terms of spending the funds that we had programmed in fiscal year 13, and then also ODOT does a summary report for all the MPOs in Ohio, and they sent us that report, and it looks like we were on. As far as delivering projects, we were above all the other MPOs. We had 34 construction contracts be awarded last fiscal year, and the second two MPOs they only had 20 construction contracts awarded in 2013. So that this past year was really a good year as far as spending our funds. And the reason this all happened was kind of a two-part thing. One is we over-programmed. Remember our last round of funding, and then the other is, you know, you can over-program, but the hard part is delivering the projects. So some of the things that we put into place has helped get these projects through. One was when we avoided having projects locked down in the fourth quarter. So it's typically, if they get delayed, they get moved into the next fiscal year. So that helped when we originally put these projects in, avoiding the fourth quarter. Of course, all the efforts of the sponsors and getting these projects delivered and our quarterly project review meetings that we have, and then of course we couldn't have done it without the team at ODOT District 4 to get all these projects delivered. So we're going to continue to do these efforts and improve wherever we can, just so that we can demonstrate that this area does need federal funds and we have the ability to deliver those projects. A couple other things to mention, the statewide CMAQ funding program. Just a quick recap. We came up with a rough draft of the policy. ODOT had a couple issues with it. We kind of went back and we've got a revised draft policy that we're finalizing. And from here on out, we'll pass that on to ODOT again for their kind of ratification of it. And then at some point, it's going to come back to the ARJPO for ratification at this level. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to be. And then from that point forward, once that's all finalized, this new CMAQ funding policy will then, either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year, will be around the funding for CMAQ projects, and that will be for fiscal years 2018 and up. Our payment condition rating PCR program, our PCR subcommittee met back in June. They discussed a couple of things, what the scope or baseline of specifications would be for the collection of PCR data and how agreements would be set up between communities and some accounting who's agreed to be the fiscal agent for this effort. So it's expected a lot of these details be worked out by early next year so that the consultant could be hired to start collecting data for calendar year 2015. And then that'll just play into our next round of funding, not the one coming up this fall, but our next round of funding. So we'll have a fresh set of data to work with for scoring our resurfacing projects. Federal functional classification update. We've received all the requests of changes from all the members, from all of our members who requested changes. And now we're awaiting some information from ODOT to know how many mileages that we have that we can change per functional class. And we're going to kind of join those things together, see what we can change, what we can't change based on these requests and the mileages that we have. Then that'll come back to this committee for final approval by the end of the year. So, and the last thing I want to mention, our next round of funding is this fall. Over the next several months, we'll be looking at our funding policy guidelines, see what changes need to be made, and then that'll come again to this committee for approval. Once those funding policy guideline changes are approved, we'll then start a new round of funding in probably sometime October, November time frame, and then hopefully by December or at the latest January, by January, maybe at the latest by March of next year, we'll know what the project awards are for this next round of funding. So that's all I have on this item. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yes. On the PCR program, from a timing standpoint, when would you see the actual ratings begin and so that the city can anticipate what paving is going to take place and things of that nature? I'm just wondering the logistics of it.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at right now is that when the consultant is hired, they'll be doing the collection in calendar year 2015, and they'll do it within the summertime.
So it'll be like a year from now.
Well,
two years.
So the paving won't take place till 60.
Well, this is just collecting the PCR data. Then that data we'll use for communities that apply to us for funding that fall. So then the funding at the earliest would be available would be like 2016.
Okay.
Just for clarity, between now and then, though, we're going to use the ODOT
correct
payment rate.
Correct. For this all round of funding that starts this fall, we'll be using the PCR data that ODOT collected in 2012.
Right. Which is the same data we've been using.
Well, our last
round. Except it's been updated.
Correct.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
Any other questions? Thank you. Item 3D, the final certification of the urban transportation plan. Andy?
Mayor Klein and Director Sagany and the Policy Committee. My name is Andy Johns. I'm with Federal Highway Administration, Ohio Division. I'm here not only representing the Federal Highway Administration, but also the Federal Transit Administration as well. Every 4 years, we are required to conduct a joint certification review of the transportation planning process for an MPO with a population over 200,000, which AMETS is. It's called the Transportation Management Area. And over the course of the last few months, we've conducted a certification review, which contained a couple parts. First was an internal desk review to determine what sort of emphasis areas we wanted to highlight a little further. And then in early May, we visited AMATS for about a day and a half on-site visit, which also consisted of a public meeting that evening. By no means is a certification review a review of AMAT staff, but I do want to thank Krista and Curtis and Victor for their engaging discussions during that day, where we had a significant amount of questions that we provided them in advance. They were proactive in returning the answers to those questions in a very concise and well-written fashion, which helped to make our on-site more efficient and enhance that entire process. I can say without hesitation that FHWA and FTA certifies the AMATS transportation planning process. This is a great MPO. We did have one commendation, which read directly to the Connecting Communities Initiative. We know that marrying land use and transportation is way more than art than a science. And we just want to compliment AMATS on that initiative, not only in coming up with the initiative, but implementing that initiative and actually putting some meat to it. So we really appreciated that effort. Our recommendations are fairly minor. The first one is to more firmly integrate multimodal performance measures into the congestion management process. And the second one is not really, it's hardly a recommendation. AMATS has a great EJ process. We just feel like that process and how EJ communities are interacted with just needs to be documented a little bit better. So once again, you are in very good hands for the transportation planning process for the Akron area. We couldn't be any more pleased. So I thank you for your time. And if you have any questions, feel free.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Item number four, old business. Ask Jason just to give us a very brief update on the CMAQ funding or the CMAQ program with the MPOs throughout the state of Ohio that he's been on a special committee.
Yeah, and just real quickly, Victor touched on this a little bit in the report on the funding, but maybe just to give you a little bit more information and make sure there aren't any questions. As you know, we started a couple months ago a special CMAQ committee to look at the issue, and as Victor reported, we've been working with the other MPOs to come up with a new way of selecting projects on a statewide basis rather than just each individual MPO. If you remember, that was basically the issue. ODOT combined all of the eight large MPO funding programs of CMAQ into one large program, and our task as the eight largest MPOs were basically to put our heads together, come up with criteria for picking projects and programming them. So I think everything Victor reported on pretty much brings you up to date, but I just wanted to also add that I think we're making good progress with the other MPOs coming back. I think both Victor and I are pretty confident that we'll be able to select and program the kinds of projects that all of you have been used to receiving CMAQ funding for. There are some details that still need to be worked out. I think, you know, the largest challenge with working with the seven other MPOs has just been, as you can imagine, we all do things a little bit differently when it comes to project selection. And but I think the more that we've looked into the issue with our seven counterparts, we've learned that, you know, most of those differences are pretty superficial. So as Victor mentioned, what will happen next is we'll put together a draft actual funding policy. ODOT will review that to see if it fits in with the goals that it has for the program. And then also, as Victor had kind of touched on, at some point that will come back, I think, to that CMAQ subcommittee that we put together, make sure that everybody's comfortable with that, give the entire policy committee a chance to review it as well. And then hopefully come, you know, December or January, we'll be in a position where we have a statewide policy and we can start picking projects.
Great. Any questions? Thank you. Item number five, the new business A, 2010-2012 trash technical.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I'm going to present the 2010-2012 trash report. During my presentation today, we're going to look at a few issues that we're facing in transportation and safety. We're going to look at some crash trends in the EMS area, review the criteria for a high crash location, and look at a few of the actual locations, and then discuss the ODOT safety program. Distracted driving is probably still one of the top issues in transportation safety. I know that we tend to limit that to cell phone use or texting, but actually distracted driving is any activity that takes away from the task of driving. It's really hard to determine exactly how many crashes this causes. House Bill 99 that was passed last year prohibits texting while driving, and then it prohibits texting and cell use for those under 18. And just this year, the new OH1 report actually has a section that the officer fills out if he feels the accident was caused by distracted driving, and that's actually a copy of that section on the new report. Alcohol-related crashes are still, they're a relatively small percentage of crashes. In our area, it's just over 2,200, but unfortunately, alcohol-related crashes account for 44% of all fatal crashes. And if you look at these crash reports, you see it usually involves a loss of control and then a vehicle hitting a fixed object next to the highway. These usually peak around 2 a.m. Youth and senior driving. Youth is defined as ages 16 to 25, and senior is defined as age 65 and over. Youth are involved in over 40% of all crashes. It's the largest percentage by age group. And unfortunately, also the largest percentage of fatalities, over 25%. Youth usually have experience issues. They don't calculate risk well, and they like to have fun. Age 65 and over is a very rapidly growing percentage of drivers. They account for about 14% of the accidents in our area. Senior drivers are usually good drivers. They're very cautious, but unfortunately they have diminishing sensory skills and also reaction time issues. And this is a graph showing youth crashes and senior crashes. The bottom line is age, and you can see when people start out driving, you have a very high crash rate and fatality rate. And then as time goes on, around 25, it seems to drop, and then it's pretty level until you get to about 65. And then it it goes up again, but not nearly as high as where it starts out. Looking at actual crash trends in our area, I guess I could best describe this as things are pretty well stabilized. We had a few less crashes. Our crash totals do exclude animal and construction zone crashes. The most common accident type is a rear end collision, and most of our crashes happen between 3 and 5 p.m., which is also the peak evening rush hour. Injuries are also pretty stable, a few less. Within the category of injury, you have subcategories. One of the subcategories that did go up a little bit was severe injuries. And fatalities are also down slightly. These are a little, these differ from other accidents because they usually happen at night, past 8 p.m. And once again, they usually involve a single vehicle, and they involve speeding, loss of control, and hitting a fixed object. Bicycle-related crashes down a little bit. This is good. Unfortunately, with these crashes, it's a small percentage of all the crashes, but over 78% of them usually result in an injury. 21% of bicycle crashes involve children 12 and under. And the reason I mention that is when you start looking at these crash reports, you get a better picture of what happens, and you see kids are just being careless. And I'm not sure if there's much from an engineering standpoint we can do about that. That's more education and more discipline. Pedestrian crashes also down a little bit, 481 for the three-year period. Once again, a high percentage of injuries, 86% usually result in an injury, and 12% of these were children 12 and under. To define a high crash location, first for roadway sections, it has to have 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of at least one. And for intersections, 10 crashes and a crash rate of one. We rank these locations by a composite score. A composite score takes into account the total number of crashes, the crash rate, and the severity index. It's a more complete picture of what's happening at the location. 123 sections made the list. That's table one in your handout. And the top five highway sections is Martin Luther King Boulevard or State Route 59 from the West Market Street Bridge to North Broadway Street in Akron, West Exchange Street in Akron, Manchester Road in Akron, East Main Street in Kent. Well, two sections of East Main Street in Kent. The one at State Route 59 is the one that runs right through the campus. This is a picture of the top highway section. When you start looking at the crash reports, a lot of the crashes happen right in this area where the freeway transitions to an urban street. This is the second location, West Exchange Street. This is always near the top. For some odd reason, cars keep wanting to turn left from this lane. And Akron Traffic Engineering even put up signs saying left turn from curb lane only, but it's still happening. Intersections, 263 intersections made the list. That's table two in your handout. The top intersection is Martin Luther King Boulevard and North Howard / Main Street in Akron, East Market Street and Mogador Road, in Akron, South Arlington and Waterloo Road, Darrell Road and Graham Road in Stowe, and East Waterloo Road or US 224 and Canton Road in Springfield Township. Once again, this is the same picture, but this time it's showing the highest crash intersection. This is Talmadge Circle. I threw this in because this always has the highest number of crashes, but it doesn't rank. It ranks 25th. It doesn't rank real high, but it actually ranks 25th because it's the severity of the crashes are usually low. It's a lot of low impact rear end crashes, and the crash rate is also low. Now, some people call this an intersection, and some people call it eight separate intersections. Regardless of what you call it, it's still a location that has the highest number of crashes in our region. And actually, 284 is down a little bit, so that's good news. Freeways, the freeway analysis is done by ODOT. The 2012 is not quite done yet, but when it is, we'll post it on our website. The ODOT safety program is one of the largest in the country. Traditionally, they spent around $72 million. It's recently been increased to $100 million. And this money can be spent on any public road. It doesn't have to be a state road. Applications due in the central office April 30th and September 30th. You must get it into your district at least 6 weeks earlier so they can process it. You can use the money for studies, for design right away, and construction. Typical request $50,000 to $5 million, but there's exceptions where they've gone higher. And this is really a good deal because the local match is only 10%. Now I'm going to. I just added this slide because I want to discuss another issue that just came up this week. The ODOT safety money is available for any location, but for that location for us to know about that location, you have to make sure that your local police department sends the crash reports to the Ohio Department of Public Safety. We recently had an issue where Springfield Township crash reports were not getting to the to Columbus for processing. Therefore, when we obtained the data, we did not have the data, and a safety project at Canton Road and US 224 is being planned, and safety money is being applied for. So last week I frantically redid my list and incorporated these crash reports or these crashes into the list because ODOT sent them to me last Thursday. So I wanted to add this slide because it's very important that your community does make sure that you send those reports to Columbus, because we do not get our crash reports from each community. We get it from the Ohio Department of Public Safety, but they depend on your community for sending it to them. So I just wanted to kind of stress that. So concluding, total crashes, injuries, fatalities, down a little bit, which is good news. All the locations in your tables are eligible for ODOT safety funding, and you can use the funding for studies, design right-of-way, and construction. Dave Griffith is the contact person at District 4. Julie from District 3, if you're from Wayne County. We'll have all these locations sorted by community on our website, so you can just go to your community and see what's happening. And of course, feel free to contact us if you have any questions. So that pretty much concludes my my presentation. Are there any questions? Yes.
I just have a quick question about the bicycle, the chart that you put up. You have conditions where there are no bike paths along the highways.
Yes.
And then you have conditions where some communities will make that investment in the incremental space and there'll be bike paths. I'm just curious if you have the data that says, do you have more bike crashes when you create an environment for more bicycle activity, or do you have more bike crashes when you don't have the bike path environment that creates a safe environment for them? I'm not sure if I was very clear in that question.
No, I understand the question. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer off the top of my head.
Would your data have? I asked the question because we have citizens groups that would like to have bike paths, and I don't know whether you end up with more traffic or bicycle accidents because you've increased the bicycle activity because you've created the environment for it, or whether you have bicycle crashes because you don't have the environment for bicycles.
I think, Mayor, that's a great question, and one thing, I'll talk to Dave after the meeting. We could probably may not be perfect, but I think it would give basically what you're asking. We could look at where the crashes are occurring and just compare that to the information we have on, is there a bike lane there, are there wider shoulders, and we can kind of do an assessment of, did the bike crash occur in a, quote, you know, bike-friendly area or not? And I think we could report back next time at least what percentage of all the crashes, because I actually never thought to do that. That's a great point.
Jason, can I just send you a quick email as a reminder?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I guess when you look at the statistics that you presented, I mean, the bike crashes are down a little bit, and the thought of complete streets have been talked about a lot, and I also ride bicycles all around, and it is very dangerous on the roads without the wider berms, but you actually don't want to go on them too much. But I think with the complete street, it'd be a great statistic to learn about.
Gene? I just ask one question, though. If we put in bike lanes parallel to our roadways, have we invited more bike traffic, hence more bike accidents?
That was the question.
Right. Yeah, but if you didn't have the lanes, would you have more bike accidents because there's more bike traffic?
So
I'm saying,
that's the one piece I didn't introduce. I just assumed that the more bike friendly you are, the more biking you have, and you know, it's like the Talmadge Circle. I mean, the more traffic you have, you probably get a few more rear-ends.
And Gene, your question or comment is good too, because I think it demonstrates that we're, I think, just at the very beginning of getting more sophisticated about bike planning. And so I think, you know, as bike traffic goes up, which in a way is what we want if we want to promote alternatives, you know, by definition, there will end up being more bike crashes. Just like if you have more traffic, you'll have more total accidents. But then I think what we have to get more sophisticated is the bike crash rate going up or down, because that's probably more of a true measure of the safety, and I think that's something we'll have to work toward, but it's a good thing to work toward.
We used to have counters throughout AMAS that were used to normalize data. There was one on 43 just south of Kent. I don't know if it's still there or not. But having some kind of a count off of a few given locations throughout the community to set some normalization would be probably a good process. I don't think we're doing that yet, are we?
We with our own staff, have started a bike counting program, but it's another, you know, it's not nearly at the level of sophistication as our traffic counting program, because unlike the traffic counting, we can't really put automated equipment out. We have to have people observing physically, but that's something I think we're trying to work with. We've even done some work with Kent State, for example, to see if we can partner with them and with graduate students and things like that to get bike counts. And so I think as we get more sophisticated with that, hopefully we'll get better data on bike travel as well.
Any other comments?
Questions?
Entertain them. Yes, sir.
The two high crash locations in Portage County on the ends of Main Street in Kent, is there a breakdown of whether those are more pedestrian crashes or other non-vehicle crashes because of the relatively high pedestrian area there?
I can easily break that down. I can easily look at what's happening there, you know, in more detail. I would assume that it would be. There would be, since that's a very high pedestrian crossing area.
And the fact that there are a lot of drive-out businesses on a state route.
That's
not the common situation.
We're in the same pool as everybody in this table, in this room, but we take the data and drill down into it even further to ask some of those questions.
And I think the other section of Main Street, the one that's not the one that's downtown, the one that's not the main State Route 59, if I remember correctly, doesn't that have angle parking? Does that have angle parking?
In the immediate downtown area.
Yeah.
Right.
And that comes into play. And when you look at this stuff closer, especially like in an urban area like that, it's not severe crashes. It's small people backing up and hitting another car type crash.
Any other questions? Entertain a motion for attachment 5A.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 5B, Ohio Research Initiative. Is Vicki here?
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vicki Powell. I am from ODOT's research section in the central office. I've got a flyer here I'm going to get passing around for you guys to keep. How many of you knew ODOT had a research program? There's a few of few of you that have heard of it. That's pretty good. We are trying to do something new here in Ohio. We're developing a research program that's going to be designed to address the needs of local transportation agencies in Ohio. ODOT's had a research program for forever, and it focuses on state-level type of issues. Interstates, state routes, anything that has to do with high volume, high traffic roads, that's what we focus on. But for the traveling public, there's no difference between a county road, a city road, a state route, an interstate. It's just a road, and it needs to be good, and they need to be able to get where they're going to without any problems. Back in 2011, we hosted a peer exchange with Iowa and Minnesota. Both of those states have had local research programs going on since the 50s. And they have boards that oversee them, and what they do is they identify needs and issues that face local transportation systems, and then they do research studies to try to fix those issues, resolve those problems, and enhance those systems. So we wanted to try to do that here in Ohio. So we initiated a program called Ohio's Research Initiative for Locals. It's coordinated between ODOT's research section, the Ohio LTAP Center, and also we have got partnerships developed with the County Engineers Association of Ohio, the Ohio Municipal League, and the Township Association. And a board was put together to oversee this program, develop it, devise it, and then run it. The board consists of four county engineers, four city engineers, four ODOT technical staff, one township engineer, and then there's me, a gentleman from LTAP, and then a person from FHWA who kind of hang out and keep the thing going. The board is brand new. They've just been putting together the program, designing how it's going to run. We will be asking for research ideas for the first time coming this September. Those projects will be expected to start in July of next year. What OGRA will do is the board will solicit for ideas from the locals. Any local in Ohio can submit an idea to the OGRA research program. The board will look at those ideas, and then they will pick from those which ones are going to be turned into projects. Funding for this program right now is being provided completely by ODOT's research program. $2 million over the next 4 years dedicated to OREAL. One of the things the board is going to look into is trying to figure out a more permanent funding stream for the program. But we will be funding the research activities. Those research ideas will be offered out as a request for a proposal to the research community. They will be making bids on those in March of next year. The board will then look over those with the technical advisory committees that will be assembled for each research idea that becomes a project. And then the contract will be let to have that research study actually occur. If you become a member of a technical advisory committee, you're kind of the person who oversees the project from a technical level. You may interact with the researcher to see what they're doing, are they making good progress, clarify technical issues or questions they may have. The ODOT Research Office will take care of all the fun, exciting administrative contractual things such as billing and contracting, and the things that everybody just loves to do. We'll take care of that for you. There is a website for the OGRA program. The link is on your brochure that's passed out. I encourage you to go check that out. There's information on the board. The numbers are listed here in your brochure. You get some more information on each of those. We're in the process right now of finalizing the strategic research plan that's going to identify the focus areas that the projects are going to be geared towards to let you know where the funding's going to go towards. And that is going to be finalized next month. We will be going out and doing what we're calling overall idea sessions. We're going to do five of them across the state. The one that's going to happen in this region will happen on October 2nd. It will be at the Acton Summit County Library. It will be open to any local transportation official who wants to come, find out more details about what the program is, what it can do for you, how you can get involved. And there will also be an activity at that where we will actually generate some ideas and turn them into actual submissions that can go on to the board for consideration for funding. I know I spoke kind of fast. Does anybody have any questions or anything they'd like to know about? Yes.
The you seeking participation from local governments. Are you limiting the participation to governments? Are you including NGOs or other community organizations?
Any local organization that deals with transportation issues is welcome to submit. If AMAX wants to submit ideas on behalf of its members, that is more than welcome. It can be a city can send something in, a township can send it in, a village, an MPO, an RPO, any local public agency that deals with transportation will be welcome to submit ideas to the board. One of the things we'll be going over in the review sessions, the idea sessions we're going to do, is what the criteria is that the board has established for how they're going to pick their product, their ideas, and how they're going to prioritize them so that you know ahead of time what they're looking for when you submit your stuff. You guys have things that you deal with every day, you just might not have the time to address them or the resources to address them, but research can be a good conduit to be able to get your issues resolved.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 6A, resolution 2013-10, approving amendment number 1 for attachment number 6A. Victor?
Thank you. In our last round of funding, the Village of Manaway had submitted for transportation, at that time it was called Transportation Enhancement Program funding for a sidewalk project on State Route 44. This committee awarded them $45,000 in those funds to construct this project. Since that time, this project has been combined with a larger ODOT project, and ODOT's project includes replacing a bridge over a branch of the Cuyahoga River, as well as resurfacing, and the sidewalk project is within those limits. The latest estimate on this sidewalk project is at $125,000. So the city or the village is requesting that AMATS provide 8% of that cost, so that'd be $100,000. And since we no longer deal with the Transportation Enhancement Program, this would come out of the Transportation Alternatives Program funding. And this would just be an additional $55,000 above the $45,000 that has already been approved for this project. The village would have came to us in the fall to reapply for funding, as most communities normally do if they're short funds. But because this project is tied with the larger ODOT project, ODOT already delayed their project. They can't delay it anymore, and they need to know by December whether the village can certify that they have funds available for the sidewalk portion of the project. So because of that, the village did come to our tax TIP subcommittee, meaning that this is not an overround of funding, to present their request. The subcommittee did talk about it, and they have recommended that this funding be approved as requested by the village for this project. So, again, it's just an additional $55,000 in Transportation Alternative Program funding, and the tax TIP subcommittee, as well as the staff, recommend approval.
So moved. Second.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 6B, resolution 2013-11, approving amendment number 2 per attachment 6B. Victor?
Thank you. This resolution kind of covers two things. If you'll recall, the last round of funding, when we were developing this current TIP 2014 through 2017, one of the requirements we had was that we had to financially constrain the TIP. In other words, we couldn't have more projects in there than we had funding. So we over-programmed, and we didn't have enough funds to cover those projects. In order to financially constrain the TIP, we had to actually move some of those projects out of that four-year window, 14 through 17. So with this resolution seeks to do is to move those projects back into that four-year window, and then the second part of that is we had a project review meeting back in June, and some of those projects has moved. So based on those two issues, bringing the projects back in the TIP and our project review meeting, this resolution just moves projects where they need to be. So even though this first group of projects where it says new projects, these are already approved for funding by this committee. It's just new in the sense that it's in this new 40-year window that she has to do. So the staff recommends approval.
Motion on the floor.
So moved.
Second. Been a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 6C, Resolution 2013-12, approving amendment number 3 for attachment 6C. David?
Okay, thank you. Resolution 2013-12 is amendment 3 to the new TIP. This amendment adds 4 new projects and revises 2 existing projects. The 4 new projects, the first project is the Gent Historic District Wayside in Bath Township using discretionary funds. Waterloo Road and Arlington Street in Akron. This is a new project. This was actually our third highest crash intersection, so this is good news. This project is using $663,000 in highway safety funds. The I-76 Akron Beltway study is scheduled in 2014 using interstate maintenance funds. And the I-77 White Pond Drive project is a embankment repair using interstate maintenance funds. The Akron-Cleveland Road is an existing project. Funding was revised. And State Route 619 Wooster Road is an existing project where the schedule was revised.
We heard the comments from Mr. Ondecker at the very beginning. Can you help us with that a little bit?
Sure. The I-76 Akron Beltway study is actually using $14.4 million in interstate maintenance funds and $1.6 million in state funds. I'm not real close to this project. I've tried to research it as much as I could. It's my understanding that that these amounts listed are not...
I was going to ask Curtis if he could maybe come up and talk just a little bit more about the Citizens Involvement Committee meeting, and then I know Steve from ODOT District 4 is definitely the closest to the project of any of us. So
okay.
I thought Curtis could just provide a little more context on the discussion that Mr. Ondecker brought up, and then I think you'll all be in a better position to understand ODOT's response.
Real quickly, the CIC meets the week before the policy committee, and as Chairman Ondecker stated, there was a lot of discussion regarding this issue. I think first and foremost, just the $16 million price tag originally was, I think a lot of people thought that was for the study itself versus the preliminary engineering as well, and that was part of the issue was why are we paying $2 million for another study. The second issue, I think, which might be a little bit more to the crux of, I think, what we heard from the citizens was also that what are we going to get for the $2 million? Because I think the concern is that this area, this I-76 corridor, Central Interchange, Kenmore Lake, has been studied before, and it has, and there is a project, and there was a meeting 6 years ago with residents, to talk about even property relocation, et cetera. And I think the other question the CIC was running, well, we don't want to, are we going to spend $2 million and then just get recommendations that we already knew existed when we were, moving this project forward 6 years ago or 7 years ago? So I think that was part of what we heard from CIC as well was, and I think from a lot of the members of the public, what they were thinking was, if this $2 million can be spent and we end up getting projects that are cut the cost of the overall, Central Interchange in half, then it would be a good, it'd be a good investment. But if we're going to do a $2 billion plan and end up doing the same project that we already knew we were going to do 6 years ago, there were a lot of issues and heartburn over that in terms of being, good stewards of their tax dollars. So I hope that clarifies where they were coming from. And then Steve, maybe you can,
Sure. Thank you, Curtis. I guess the department's perspective here. We gave a track presentation last June that some of you were at. We're looking at all four quadrants of the freeway system, 277, the Kenmore leg, the west leg, and the south leg. And you did mention the other study. I mean, we haven't, though, ever looked at all four quadrants at once. We're going to look and see origin destination, see where all the traffic's coming from, see where all the traffic's going. I don't think that type of total look has really been done before. So the game plan is to do a preliminary study, you know, traffic driven, and then once we get pieces, parts of the projects, be it two or three separate specific projects, we don't quite know yet, and then we will roll over any remaining PE funds into those specific projects and do them all the way through design.
And I think, Steve, let me know if I go astray here, but just to clarify what I think you mentioned to me earlier and what you're saying here is, so the $16 million that's listed here, most likely the study, the planning study itself, will be a pretty small
Correct.
Portion of that, and the rest of that money would roll into the detailed design work.
Of any specific projects that will come up.
Right.
We just don't know how many that will be at this time until we get it off the ground.
And then one more clarification, because I think this helps address what the citizens raised. And then also, you know, the whole reason the department kind of decided to take this fresh look was in the hope that maybe the $290 or $300 million central interchange project that was originally envisioned, maybe something that extensive wouldn't actually have to be done and you could save
and
money.
And we can spread it wherever it's needed in the four quadrants to hopefully even, you know, get better results than just focusing right on the central.
Can I ask why we're not being asked to approve $2 million instead of $16 million?
Well, that's what we're going out for the consultant. I mean, we have it on the programmatic. We're going to hire somebody this fall. And that's, that's our
plan. That's the way we advertise for the consultant. That's our estimated for the overall project. We have to set up that amount of money to be able to go hire the consultant to go from the planning stages all the way through the design phase. At this point, it is an estimate because, as Steve said, we are starting way at the planning stage, going to try to figure out what projects are going to come out of this or where the actual problems are within the Beltway system.
So if this is approved, does that commit the expenditure of the entire $16 million price tag, or is it some sort of stage expenditure over a period of time after one section, one portion of the study is completed, and then there
correct, it'll work its way through
required after that. Or?
You would have the study portion first, and then we'll roll down through. You know, I'm assuming as the first project is identified, then we would go for it on, you know, another chunk of money there, and so on and so on.
So the process here is to get this amount of money allocated to this project, but doesn't necessarily commit it to being spent. Yes.
Yeah, but we need it to be available in their plan and everything, so we can go for the assorted authorizations that are necessary because of the federal dollars that are involved.
So it's an acquisition of getting back some federal dollars, but are we committed to spending all those federal dollars on this project?
I mean, I guess we don't quite know yet. I mean,
we could down the line.
Yeah.
We're going to spend it in very small chunks of money. Is that what you're...
Yes.
We're going to spend it in very small chunks of money. As we step through the whole process, the whole planning, preliminary engineering process, we're going to do it in very small chunks.
I think his question for clarification is, you're going to authorize $2 million, which is kind of your study phase. If you don't like what comes out of that report, they're not going to authorize any more money.
Yeah, we're not going to go beyond until we know something.
If they have an A, B, or C project they like, they may authorize A and then B and then C. That's kind of your
approach.
So I hope that kind of what I was hearing.
Sorry,
went to the state, was there any excitement about funding the construction? I mean, we've got $16 million here for...
We didn't bring it up at the time. Our presentation was just to get our new concept of studying this was all new to the track and everything else. So that's really all we went to the track for at this time.
And until we know what those projects are...
We'll have to go back to the track down the road.
I'm just curious what the sense was.
I think they were comfortable and happy with this approach.
Any other discussion? This takes a motion. Is there a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been second. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 7, other business. Jason?
Yes, we are going to have a presentation by Hunter Morrison, the director of the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium. And I think as we've talked about at previous meetings, this is an organization that AMATS has been a member of for about the last 2.5 years. And this is, you might recall, the 12-county effort to look at creating a more sustainable Northeast Ohio and basically focusing on transportation, housing, land use, the environment, and economic development. And I've given periodic reports over the last year and a half to 2 years as we've gone through through the process, but I think this is one of the first opportunities really for all of you to be able to engage with the director of the consortium, Hunter Morrison, who is good enough to join us today. And I think what Hunter's going to do is take us through about 10 or 15 minutes of where the consortium is. We're about 6 months away from the end of the federal grant, which launched this initiative. And Hunter will say much better than I could say kind of where we're at, where we're going. And I think also what he wanted to do is solicit some input from all of you as far as your reaction to some of the materials and find out more about how you can get engaged at the local level with the effort if you so choose. So without any further ado, Hunter, thanks a lot for joining us today, and the floor is yours.
Jason, thank you, and Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to speak here, and I hope it's not the last time, because we are now at a point where, after 12 years worth of laboring in the vineyards, we're coming to fruition with findings and need your engagement in helping us to sort out what the choices and the opportunities are for Northeast Ohio and specifically for the AMATS area. Let me first off say thank you very much for your engagement with our work. As Jason may have indicated to you in his reports in the past, AMATS was one of the founding partners in this effort. This is an effort that was spurred about 3 years ago by an unprecedented federal grant opportunity brought together by Department of Housing and Urban Development, Department of Transportation, and EPA, suggesting that they're going to collaborate at the federal level. They want to encourage that sort of collaboration between housing and transportation and environmental planning at the local level. Most of the grantees are metropolitan planning organizations. We are blessed in many ways by having not one but four, plus the NEFCO Council of Governments. And so what happened was that the groups came together with some help and assistance from the Fund for an Economic Future, engaged cities and counties, organizations like GCRTA out of Cleveland, coming together to put together a grant application, which we were successful in getting, that included creating a nonprofit entity, the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium, which could act on behalf of these groups to undertake this study and hopefully provide additional information and a platform for discussion across the 12-county region. The work has been challenging. We have set up the organization. We have undertaken a detailed assessment going back to 1970 of where we come as a region. We are now finishing a process of looking at what happens in the future if we continue on the course that we have over the last 20 years, what are the consequences on our land, on our water quality, but also on our fiscal health as communities across Northeast Ohio. And we are engaging in the next several weeks in a set of open houses to present this information about both business as usual and alternatives to get public comments and involvement. And so one of my first asks is that you all come to the open house that we have in Akron on August 1st, on Thursday, August 1st, to see the work, to critique it, to engage with us in it, because we're going to bring it back to you. We're going to bring it back to you because our goal is to create a framework for the future. We're not doing a plan. You guys are responsible for long-range transportation plans. Other agencies are doing water and air quality plans. And local governments are responsible for land use planning in their jurisdictions. What we're attempting to do here is provide a regional framework for discussion and decision-making, provide the tools which you can use to make more informed decisions and hopefully move forward in a somewhat more coordinated way into the future as we all face the challenge of doing more with less. So let me go briefly through where we are and what's upcoming and then open up to some questions. Again, we have a three-part process that we've been engaged with, which the first part of which we concluded at the beginning of May, which is to look at business as usual. Building off the work we did last year on assessing the conditions and trends in Northeast Ohio, the platform is available on our webpage, vibrantneo.org. We then projected these trends particularly from 1990 to 2000 to 2010 out to 2040, and we specifically picked 2040 because you and the other three MPOs either are or will soon be using 2040 as your planning time horizon. So we wanted to align this work with the work that you're doing as a matter of course. We had those workshops. We've been assessing alternative scenarios, which ask the question, where could we go? And we're having the round of workshops in the next 2 weeks. And then in the fall, we will be coming back with what we believe, based on what we've heard from people, is the preferred scenario for you to look at, for you to examine, and determine whether it works for you and give us your feedback. We're going to have, again, the phase two open houses July 29th to August 7th. The one in Akron is at the Herbal Lake on August 1st. And then a phase three workshop in late September, where we talk about where should we go. The goal then is to bring back to this body and to the other groups our findings and ask for your endorsement after an appropriate review. The process of where we are today started with, again, the phase one workshops, which looked at what we call business as usual, or the trends. The trends we're looking at are between 1990 and 2010. We have a group within our body called the Technical Steering Committee, along with which Jason sits, along with the other MPO and COG directors. And we mutually agreed that going back before that got us all into the challenge of the deindustrialization that hit all of our core communities in the 70s and 80s. So this appeared to be the best projection framework to work from. And what you see is we grew about 3.8 million people in 1990. We grew somewhat, and we've declined somewhat, and we're about where we were. We're looking at a population projection of a little south of 4 million people by 2040. And it's helpful to understand that the projections in the aggregate that were done by the groups that became the four MPOs back in the 70s suggested we would grow to about 5 million people. So one of the things that's happened in Northeast Ohio is we've been flat for a very long period of time. Our job growth, again, went up in the 90s and went back down in the Great Recession. We're projecting a modest employment growth. One of the success stories that we saw when we really began to analyze this was the amount of acreage in parks and conservation land mainly with the National Park, but also with the work of the Western Reserve Land Conservancy and others to put habitat and other significant lands, agricultural lands of quality, into conservation. We see us at this rate by 2040 having about 10% of the region's land in conservation. This may be a little challenging to see at this scale, but what we've been able to do is to project out land use across the entire Northeast Ohio. We were able to do this in part because one of the early collaborations and using techniques that you developed here and that Bob now developed down at SCATS to bring together the maps and the information from the 12 counties. We have now created a parcel-based a land use and zoning map for the 1.8 million parcels in Northeast Ohio by linking and leveraging the GIS teams, the four MPOs at Cuyahoga County to create this, which then allows us to project for about 800,000 cells in varying sizes where the land use is likely to be affected going forward. What we see in the business as usual is not unexpected. We see continued exurban growth out particularly on the freeway corridors from the cores of Akron, Canton, Cleveland, Youngstown, Warren, Lorain, and Elyria. What is most striking is the abandonment that takes place as a consequence of growth at the edges with no growth in population and jobs to speak of. Most seriously hitting Cleveland and Youngstown and Warren, but also showing significant impact in the future as time goes on in Akron and Canton and Lorain and Elyria. The older industrial cities, it's not surprising, the oldest parts of our region have been dying off as we built at the edges. In the aggregate, what we found in business as usual is that we're likely to see significant park acreage and land conservancy if current trends continue, about 122,000 acres. We're likely to see relatively modest acreage development in new development, but principally in rural and suburban residential, low density, some additional urban residential, industrial, and commercial. But what is the striking fact across Northeast Ohio is about 77,000 acres of residential, commercial, and industrial land abandoned in that time period. As I said before, the pattern falls principally in the oldest neighborhoods and the oldest parts of our region. It hits hardest in Cleveland and the first suburbs around it. You see that in the dark purple. It hits also in Youngstown and Warren. We're beginning to see patterns in Canton and in Akron. Again, the oldest housing is the left behind when we are building housing overall at a rate faster than we're growing households. Again, looking at this as a regional phenomenon, it means we're abandoning year on year, day on day, week on week, year on year for the next 25 years, about 18 units a day. If you were to take all of those down over the at $10,000 a unit, that's about $1.5 billion of abandoned property that needs to be cleared. And that's just the housing that doesn't deal with the commercial and industrial. One of the things this helps us frame up is the discussion that we're going to have with our land banks, with Attorney General DeWine, with the federal government, et cetera, about what level of assistance needs to take place to remove the blighting influences on our communities that are going to be a continuing issue. This is not simply the product of subprime and the Great Recession. This really is a product of growing new housing and new commercial and new industrial without sufficient population and jobs to fill all that we have. The model that we are using for scenario planning is an open source model that will remain behind and be headquartered at NOAACA, which is the fiscal agent for the project. It includes within it a fiscal impact assessment. This model starts with county level data supplied by the Federal Reserve at a national level, to which we've then added the budgetary information from the state of Ohio in each and every one of the 700 taxing jurisdictions in Northeast Ohio, aggregated by county. What we see is that The business as usual trend suggests that our as a whole, the region will be about 20% worse off in 2040 than today. Basically, what we're looking at is the bottom is the line that we all have to deal with, which is we've got to balance our budgets. We've got communities and counties today which are in pretty good health, and some that are struggling, and that's the, not only the county but the communities within it that may be on fiscal watch, et cetera. We're basically on average and balance, but the business as usual pattern, which combines growth at the edges and abandonment at the center, suggests that on average the region will be significantly worse off. Now, we all know that every one of us has to balance our own budget, so the communities will ratchet up, but that means the sort of issues of doing more with less, of raising taxes or reducing expenditures, is going to hit us all. What's also striking is the best off communities in 2010 are worse off in 2040 than the worst off communities today. It hits all of us. It hits the high performing, high growth communities. It also hits the ones which are struggling today. They'll be really struggling tomorrow if the business as usual trends play out. The negative impacts are felt across the region. Every community, every county, and that's the not only the county but the communities within it experience declining revenues compared with costs. And most the most fiscally strong county in 2040 was weaker than the weakest county today. We presented this information in six workshops across Northeast Ohio, including one here in Akron. We then asked the people who participated to join with us to become planners for the evening, to sit around maps and talk about and lay out using chips that represented compact development and dispersed development, reinvestment, preservation, conservation of green space, but also where we ought to have bike lanes and transit lines and areas of intense investment on bikes, et cetera, to be planners and to share their information. That all was digitized, and again, we can pull all this information out for you to see what's going on in great detail in Summit and Portage counties, but the aggregate picture suggests a couple of things. First of all, across the region, there was a palpable sentiment to holding on to, investing in, reinforcing the compact communities at our core, our historic cores of Cleveland, Akron, Canton, Youngstown, Warren, Lorain, Elyria. There was also interest in dispersed development, not surprisingly, at the edges along the freeway corridors, such as coming down 271 to Medina County, coming along the Route 8 corridor, etc. What we also saw, surprising to me, frankly, was the intense interest with which people saw the need to preserve agricultural land. It's true in Wayne County, but it's also true in Medina and Lorain and Geauga County that there was an interest in conservation and agricultural preservation. And we identified a number of key connections for transportation improvements that I think will help you as you look for the issues that matter to the region as a whole as you do your transportation planning. Not everybody likes to go to meetings, particularly a younger generation. Find meetings tedious and time-consuming. So we developed, along with our consultant team, an online tool called Imagine My Neo. It's still open. I would encourage you to go online. It allows you to be planners. And I don't have to tell you about constrained budgets, constrained tips. This is a constrained planning process. You can wish, but you also have a limited number of coins to play. So if you vote for heavy rail or transit, it eats up a fair amount of the disposable income. You also have the opportunity on this to talk about how you value taxes or low taxes, regulations, and other. We try to be very balanced about the range of options people have talked to us about. So go online, please, and play that. We're going to be looking as we go through the next phase of our work in our open houses. At four scenarios. We start with the business as usual scenario, which says if our growth continues to be modest and our approach to development continues the same, where will we be? Then we ask, well, what happens if we grow? Now, nobody knows the future, but we've been working with the with Team NEO and the Fund for Our Future, something called the Regional Economic Competitiveness Strategy, which projects that we might be, if we're successful, grow our economy at the rate of the national rate, not below the national rate. Well, what does that mean in terms of jobs? Well, the nation's also going to grow demographically by about 40 million people. What happens if we maintain our market share? What happens if we stop losing population of congressmen and just hold our own and get our fair share of it? So we put those numbers into this and said, let's look at what happens if we grow and if we do the same things. And then we've taken from the information from the workshops, we said, well, there's some different ways people want to look at development in the region. What happens if we do things differently in terms of where we do our development and how we manage our transportation system? But we don't. We see modest growth, and again, what happens if we see more robust growth and do things differently? So we're looking at four different options. These are scenarios and op plans, and ways of they're what ifs, they're ways of teasing out what changes and what stays the same, what values do we have, and how are they advanced or retarded by the different choices. And we'll be asking the public to comment on land use and transportation, open space, housing and neighborhoods, abandonment and infill, jobs and economy, looking at what it would cost and what would they prefer. Again, the open houses are taking place next week and the week thereafter, and we'd urge you to come in the evening of from 4:30 to 7:30 to the Urban League. We're going to have the full consulting team there to answer any questions, to go over the boards, to give us your comments on it, to also give us some feedback on what, at the end of the day, is going to be most useful for you. Because our goal is to come back to you this fall with a preferred alternative, or what I would call at this stage an emerging preferred alternative for you to consider and give us your specific feedback on, so that, Jason, when it comes time for you to and the other colleagues to vote to endorse an approach, that you do this with the full concurrence of your board, having looked at this and having determined what is the value, what doesn't make any sense, how do you drill down. Every piece of information that we're gathering is zip-coded, and meetings are all coded, so that we can, in fact, pull apart the findings to tell you what's going on in your neck of the woods. In other words, what's going on in the census tracts in Summit and Portage County? What are your people saying? And I think it's very important. We've got a 12-county region defined by the agglomeration of the four MPOs and the NEFCO COG. It's a big area, but the decisions are made at tables like this. And you need to be able to drill down and say, okay, this is lovely, this is interesting. What is it? What's it saying about our area? What are the priorities in our area? In addition to this work, we've done two, and we're going to finish a third statistically balanced telephone and internet survey, which we presented to our board. We're getting the results of Imagine My NEO and the results of that to be able to tease out what are the priorities of your community, what are the priorities generally. But again, being that it's zip coded, we will be able to make a more specific presentation, Jason, if you wish us to do that, about, okay, what's it say about Summit and Portage County? What's it say about the relationships that you're looking to the north, into the Nowacka area, Cuyahoga County, to the south, into Stark County, to the east, into the Eastgate area? What sort of collaborations are suggested that we ought to be working together on to dealing with systems that are of regional significance, our bus systems, our natural systems, our bikeway networks, things that we together could do a whole lot better, perhaps. And I do point out that we have had some experience collaborating, most recently on the response to the original proposal to sell the turnpike. And I think, Jason, it's your leadership and the other MPOs and the elected officials that gathered around and said to the governor, I don't think so. That has perhaps caused some change of thinking and some clear direction of those funds to this region. And when this region can speak about the issues of regional significance with a coherent voice in Columbus, and in Washington, I think the record is clear that we'll do a better job. So this, we hope, on your behalf, is a tool that you can use to advance the interest here in the context of a broader four-man person region. So please come, please participate, please encourage your employees to come. I know Jason's bringing his team. We've got very strong support from Summit County, Portage County, and we are hoping that we get everyone to come, take a few minutes, see what we're doing, and give us your feedback. Thanks. Thank you again.
Any questions for him at all?
Yes, sir.
You covered a lot of ground in your presentation, but I was wondering if you could take a single component of all your topics that you covered. Now, talking about public transportation, abandoned properties, economic development, job growth. If you could take that or some other component that you touched on, what one thing, if you could take all your resources and all your influence and put it behind it to do the most good with the least amount of expenditure, what do you think that would be? For instance, in my mind, it's the identification and the recycling of abandoned properties. In other words, not letting things languish in the city with broken windows, weeds, squatters going in, setting fires, drug use, and so forth. I think abandoned property, of all the topics you touched on, does the most damage to our community.
I think you're absolutely right in terms of the blighting influence, but what we're also seeing, and you'll see this in the findings, is we're not only leaving behind the houses and the factories and the shopping centers that the big parks, which are a blight and a loss to our tax base. We're leaving behind the infrastructure. We're rebuilding that infrastructure, and we're maintaining both. So repurposing that land that is already serviced, putting that to use, creating once again a tax base on that, is the most significant thing that can be done in the region as a whole on the land side. The other thing that we're seeing that's equally important in many ways is that we are spreading our jobs away from our people and away from our supply lines, by which I mean we have robust transportation systems in our metros, particularly in Cleveland and Akron, and we're growing our investments away from them, making it more difficult for employers to get employees and for employees to get to jobs. That also increases disparity and makes us less competitive. So repurposing that, we found, Jason, 8,000 acres of abandoned commercial, industrial, residential property, commercial industrial property within 1,200 feet of existing high-quality transit lines. That's just a start. There's opportunities there. But repurposing, reusing the land we've already served, we've already paid for, and we're going to continue to pay for, and that our communities rely on for tax base, and will continue to rely on for tax base, is perhaps the most significant thing I think you're going to see. The effect that happens if you put more of the effort back on the land you've already put the infrastructure into, as opposed to abandoning that and creating new interests and paying for both.
Do you feel the legal basis is already in place for communities and cities to be more proactive with slum wars, both residential slum wars and commercial and industrial slum wars? These people are broke.
Well, having been the planning director in Cleveland, yeah, you could be more aggressive.
Thank you.
There are other tools.
I see it's, we're moving on. You two can get together.
We can continue the call.
And I encourage Mr. Ondecker to go to one of your meetings there. I think that'd be great. It is now 2:59. Our next meeting is September 25th at 1:30 in the same location, and we are adjourned.